Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody, and welcome. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Francis Schott, and I'm here with Mark Pascal. Together, we own Stage Left Restaurant in New Brunswick, New Jersey, and soon-to-be Cafe Lombardi Restaurant in New Brunswick, New Jersey, and we're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. Listen to us every day from 11 a.m. to 12 noon, and you can also reach us through our website at www.restaurantguysradio.com, and you can receive our podcast sent directly to your computer if you subscribe to us at iTunes or Podcast Alley or any of those other cool sites.
Good morning, Francis.
Hi, Mark.
How you doing?
I'm fine. Today we have a very interesting guest joining us for the second day in a row. Deborah Coons Garcia is the widow of Jerry Garcia of the Grateful Dead, and she is also the writer and director of an extraordinary new documentary called The Future of Food, which is playing in select theaters around the country. And she'll be joining us to talk with us about the food industry in America and the Grateful Dead. No, not really. Not really the Grateful Dead. But about food. And it's very, very interesting. She's very intelligent, and this is a very important film. But before that, let's talk about something less important and fun. We had the two reality cooking shows this year, where PBS is Cooking Under Fire, and there was the other one, the Gordon Ramsay, what was that show again?
Hell's Kitchen. Yes, it was.
With that big jerk chef, Gordon Ramsay from England, the screaming, pot-throwing maniac.
I don't think we're going to have him on the show.
With no dignity. Oh, I'd like to get him on the show. So true to his word, Ramsay offered, Todd English from Olives offered the winner of the PBS series show a job, supposedly a chef, at one of his award-winning restaurants, except it was a mediocre restaurant, and the job was actually sous chef. You should be ashamed of yourself, Mr. English. But true to his word, Ramsay offered this guy Ray, who won the Hell's Kitchen out of the Field of 12, he offered him ownership of $1 million-plus restaurant as his prize for winning. Pretty cool. $1 million restaurant.
That's a prize. I got to tell you.
I'll take it.
Give me $1 million restaurant. I've won a prize worth winning.
I'll take it. Ray passed on the restaurant. Here's Gordon Ramsay. He says, "You've impressed me so much that I want to make you an offer," Ramsay said at the show's conclusion. The offer is a position working at Ramsay's Michelin three-star restaurant in Claridge's in London. The guy passed on the restaurant and took the job. Okay, the guy passed up $1 million.
Okay, hold on.
Take the restaurant. Sell it.
Go apply for a job. Okay?
Are you kidding me?
Go apply for a job. You don't. It's a job. Okay? Oh, it's a good job. It's a really, really good job.
I'm sorry. Fix was in. Nobody says, no, I don't want the $1 million thing you're going to give me. If you didn't want it, just take it and sell it.
Right.
Okay? So nobody offers. I'm going to give you a $1 million restaurant for nothing. And you say, no, I'd rather have a job in your restaurant. What's it pay? $1 million? I'll take it. These reality shows are stupid. It was Fox's strongest show of the summer, however, outpulling Think You Can Dance. What's our country come to that those are the two most popular shows? Unrepresentative as shows like these two might seem to full-service restaurant operators, their success nevertheless underlines the general public's fascination with restaurant work and restaurant life. Thanks, everybody.
It is fascinating. I will tell you that.
Oh, but it's fiction.
It is fascinating to watch what goes on in a kitchen, to watch what goes on behind the scenes of a restaurant. Unfortunately, these shows, you're not seeing that. You're seeing people put in places where they're not trained, they're not ready to go, and they're put into untenable situations.
But
it's unreal.
But I will tell you that if anybody offered me a $1 million restaurant for nothing, and I have a $1 million restaurant.
It wasn't for nothing. He tortured those people.
For 12 weeks? I'll work for 12 weeks. We're torturing ourselves building one right now. Hey, listen, when we come back, we're going to be talking with Deborah Coons Garcia, the widow of Jerry Garcia, who has this amazing movie called The Future of Food, which is currently at the Film Forum in New York, and will be playing at select theaters around the country. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:15. Back with the Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis, our guest today is Deborah Coons Garcia. She is the writer and director of the extraordinary new documentary called The Future of Food. It is a riveting and in-depth investigation into the disturbing truths behind genetically modified foods that have been quietly and secretly filling our grocery store shelves. GMO food is now in 60% of what we eat out there, and this film is also about the rather disturbing and dirty politics behind that food. The Future of Food is playing through the end of the month at the Film Forum in New York City and at select theaters around the country. You can find out more about this at our website. We had Deborah on the show yesterday, and we had such a it was such a great show that we asked her to come back again today.
Deborah, we only ask our favorite guests to come back twice.
I'm so honored.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Well, one of the reasons is we didn't get through a lot of what we talked about. One of the most disturbing things we talked about yesterday, I believe, was we talked about Percy Schmeiser, who's a Canadian farmer who's never wanted to grow any genetically modified organisms, never planted any genetically modified organisms, and some pollen or seeds or something blew onto his land, and then Monsanto sued him because their seeds had infected his land, and they sued him because he was growing their seeds, or it was growing on his land. He wasn't growing it. God makes seeds grow. We don't. And he hadn't paid the patent fee, and he lost, and it went all the way to the Supreme Court of Canada, and he lost. And this has really disturbing implications when we allow companies to patent life itself. Would you say that's a fair representation of where what we covered yesterday?
Yeah, well, what happened, exactly that, is that if these seeds are patented, these plants are patented, and if the pollen blows on your property and crosses with your crop, or the seeds blow on your property and grow there, you're actually growing Monsanto's patented plant, and they can take the plant or demand a patent fee from you.
That is so wrong.
Yeah, it's just
wrong is what it is.
Yeah, it's wrong because you can't protect yourself from it, you know.
Right.
You can't put up a wall high enough to stop the pollen from coming in. And I guess one particular aspect of this that is really disturbing is they have this stuff now called, it's called farming, PHARMING.
Yeah.
And they have corn that is genetically engineered to manufacture vaccines and chemicals and industrial plastics. Spermicide. So you have this. What if this pollen goes on your land and crosses with your corn?
And
then you end up eating spermicidal corn, and you don't want it. And then you'd actually owe them money. I mean, it's really kind of bizarre.
One of the things that is really frightening about owning the patent on the very form of life itself, which means you own its progeny. You know, you own after time, you own the corn that's a resultant of it. Or this can go to animal cells as well.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what I hear all the time, as I hear this about farmed fish, I hear this about genetically modified organisms of all sorts, is, oh, don't worry, it's perfectly safe. It can never escape.
Right.
And then it does.
Right.
It always does. There's never been a time where somebody said, oh, it's perfectly safe, and then it never escapes. I mean, we just had an incident here in New Jersey where three lab mice infected with plague are missing.
Oh, great.
Okay. I mean, how scary is that?
Yeah.
When we talk about the effect that genetically modified organisms have when we release them into the environment, in your film it stated that I think it's 60 genetically modified salmon, if released into the wild, could decimate and make extinct the native salmon population in the ocean.
That's right.
60.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
New Orleans, they lost a couple of dolphins. Okay.
Right.
We're talking about a couple of salmon.
Right. Well, that's because the way salmon, because they're genetically engineered to grow faster and be larger, and so out in the ocean, the females prefer the larger fish, so they mate with the larger fish, and also the offspring they're less strong, so they die off more, so it upsets the whole balance, and ultimately, you know, the genetically engineered ones prevail.
Well, these genetically engineered organisms, whatever they are being engineered to be stronger, to be dominant.
Right.
That's one of the purposes here.
The crops that are genetically engineered now, aside from the farming, you know, the PHARMING, which are all test plots, they're out there, but they're not being sold. They're out there. They're test plots, which means they can still contaminate your fields. Yeah, so it's basically, corn, cotton, soy, and canola.
Mm-hmm. One of the things we need to talk about is this Terminator gene, and it's as scary as it sounds.
Why don't you tell us about Terminator genes, Deborah?
The Terminator technology is that a plant is genetically engineered so that it's rendered sterile after it fruits or whatever.
So one of the ways that these large corporations are protecting their seeds is they give you a seed that will only make corn for that season, and then the kernels of corn will not be able to produce more corn.
That's right. It's rendered sterile. And that's still in test plots now. They haven't approved that for release. And actually, there was such an outcry against it when the world found out about it that the corporation said, oh, we're not going to go forward with this. But, of course, now they're going to these conventions, international conventions.
Right, they're not going to go forward with it for now.
Yeah, exactly.
But now what happens if that blows into my field
and if that starts cross-pollinating? If that crossed with your soy or your corn, then your corn, it would be sterile. There would be no viable seeds from that.
And I'm not saying that corporations would ever act in their own self-interest against the common good, but wouldn't it be in their interest if all the other crops got this terminator gene and then you had to go back to these corporations to keep buying your seeds every year?
Well, I guess the problem is if it contaminates everything, there would be all the seeds would be sterile. There wouldn't be any seeds.
There would be nothing to grow from. Is that really a problem for the people who are
selling you the
selling
GMO
you seeds?
Hey, listen, we'll talk more about this with Deborah Coons Garcia, who's the writer and director of The Future of Food, a riveting new documentary on food, which you must see and can find out more about on our website. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:25.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
You're back with the Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis from Stage Left Restaurant in New Brunswick, New Jersey. And our guest today is Deborah Coons Garcia. You may know her as the wife, as the widow of Jerry Garcia, but she is also the writer and director of an extraordinary new documentary called The Future of Food. And we were talking just before the break about farming, about using genetically modified plants to grow drugs. Sounds great, except that plants are, well, plants, and they cross-pollinate, and they often get out. They often get away from the corporations who say, oh, it's totally controlled. Nothing could ever happen.
Far, we're going to say always.
Except that, right, okay. Except that we're killing a monarch butterfly, whoops, except for that time. And that time.
Honestly, I am not a conspiracy theorist. I'm not somebody who says, oh, everybody's evil, everybody's...
Yes, but a corporation is going to exaggerate how safe something is if they want to sell it.
But I also look from experience. And what I'm looking at right now is our experience with these particular corporations, with the things that they have done, and how they've tried to kind of force this down our throats, no pun intended.
You make a good point in your movie, Deborah, about the difference between genetic research that's being done in laboratories for vaccines and healthcare and important things like that in a very controlled environment in the laboratory versus what's going on in the field. Can you talk about the differences there?
Right. Well, the recombinant DNA technology, which is what's used in genetic engineering for plants, is also used to make drugs, and those are done in laboratories. And we have a picture in the movie of people in a lab doing it. And it's amazing. It's all steel. They have on the white suits. They have the gloves. Mm-hmm. Everything on. And then that's genetically engineered bacteria. And then you cut to a field where it's genetic engineering, and it's out there. Blowing around, crossing with other plants.
Totally blowing in the wind, as it were.
Exactly. So it's a, and people often.
And
try
not that I like to quote songs that aren't your husband's.
Okay. he did do some wind songs. I can't remember. So it has a lot of people concerned because obviously, and one of the proponents of this, they often say, oh, if we cut out ag biotech, then my grandmother won't have her pharmaceutical. But they're really very different ways that it's done, and the pharmaceuticals are done, not the farming, not plants are genetically engineered to create drugs, but the ones that create a lot of drugs that people do take every day are in really sealed labs, totally controlled, where none of it escapes
and dies. And, if the appropriate way to deal with genetic engineering is to do it in a sealed lab and test it to death until we find out it's safe, then why is genetically modified corn not dealt with the same way? We're going to talk more about that when we come back in just a moment. Our guest is Deborah Coons Garcia. She is the widow of Jerry Garcia, and very importantly, she's the author and director of a new documentary that's playing at the Film Forum in New York and at select theaters throughout the country called The Future of Food. You have to see it. We'll be back with her in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:30. Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Francis Chott here with Mark Pascal. Together, we own Stage Left Restaurant in New Brunswick, and we're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. Listen to us every day from 11 a.m. to 12 noon, and you can also reach us through restaurantguysradio.com. We're also podcasting, and you can get us on iTunes or Podcast Alley and have our show delivered to your computer every time we put one up on the air. That's really cool. Our guest today is Deborah Coons Garcia. You may know her as the widow of Jerry Garcia. She is the writer and director of an extraordinary new documentary called The Future of Food. It is a riveting and in-depth investigation into the disturbing truths behind genetically modified organisms, or GMO foods, that have been quietly filling our grocery store shelves. You may not know that 60% of the food out there contains GMO products. It's unlabeled, it's unnoticed, and this film is also about the rather disturbing and dirty politics behind that food. You know, we talked about, just before the news, about how genetically modified organisms, when we do medical research on them, are, you know, people wear lab coats in sterile environments and keep it protected from the public. Yet we feel that we can put genetically modified organisms in our fields and let the pollen blow around into other people's fields.
And then sue them for it.
And right. You deal with an interesting ramification of our lack of testing on genetically modified foods. You cite the government of Japan, which is known to be a pretty efficient and wise government often, for the last 50 years anyway, since, you know, that whole World War II
Let's
thing.
Say it since 1950.
Yeah, okay.
So, moving right along.
But they are, now this is scary. What Japan has decided to do as their policy, they don't feel a need to test genetically modified organisms in food. Do you know why? They're testing our American school children.
Oh, that was unbelievably scary.
They're waiting to see if our kids grow another head, and then they'll decide after we have, you know, a great experiment for these big agribusiness companies. They get to experiment on us, and then the Japanese are like, well, we'll see what happens to the Americans in 10 or 15 years, and then we'll decide.
Yeah, the Japanese don't want genetically engineered food. They don't have it there, and they don't want it there. So there was a frightening statement that one of their trade representatives said, we will watch the children of America for the next 15 years.
Unbelievable. Well, the good news here about...
Do you feel like a lab rat, everybody?
Yeah, exactly. The good news here about genetically modified food, Deborah, is that we're feeding the world, right? Isn't that what's going on because of the genetically modified food?
Yeah, yeah. I was at Monsanto's website, and they said without genetically modified... I lied. I wasn't at Monsanto's website. But I've seen a lot of... because somebody's going to sue me for this show sooner or later. I want to protect myself. But the agribusiness firms all the time, I've seen all sorts of propaganda that says if we didn't have genetically modified organisms, we couldn't feed the world soon.
Well, there's a couple of reasons why that's not true. It doesn't really increase yield, except for, I think, cotton. It doesn't increase yield. And actually, they're spraying more herbicides than they were, because now with Roundup Ready crops, they can spray a crop, you know, they can spray it throughout the season.
Right.
But, yeah, I think that what everyone who actually works in the field of food aid and food world food issues know that there is enough food in the world now to feed everyone in the world. The problem isn't growing food. There's actually a surplus of food.
Right. It's distributing it, yeah.
Yeah, the problem is access to food. And I think Americans are generous and we want to help other countries, but what these countries need, they need irrigation, they need good seeds that aren't patented that they can replant.
That will grow year after year after year instead of just once?
That's right, and they need, you know, they need healthy soil, they need roads, they need infrastructure so they can get their crop out, they need stable markets. There's all kinds of things they need. But the patented seed from a corporation that's patented to be used with a chemical, which a lot of these people, you know, how are they going to afford to buy Roundup? I mean, they can't even afford to use the technology that the seeds are genetically engineered to access. Right. So, yeah, I think this whole feed the world thing, that's a way to make people feel guilty so they don't actually grapple with the issue.
Most of these people need money to buy the food that already exists.
Well, if you look at the distribution problem, I mean, think about it. And let's take it on a very basic level. We have farmers who can't sell their food. We have to subsidize them. We subsidize farmers to not grow food, okay, to keep the markets up. There are farmers all over the world who can't make a living selling their food. They could produce as much as but they can't sell it. Then there are other people in the world starving. That's not a supply problem. That's a distribution problem.
Right, right.
You know?
That's what people who work in that field know and understand, and it really frustrates them because people aren't focusing on the real issues, the real important issues.
Mm-hmm.
And also the other thing about it is, you know, here's we subsidize our farmers, and I actually think we should support our farmers, but I don't think that it should be the way it's happening now with where the richest farmers get the most money.
Sure.
And then they can't sell their crop because, like Europe and these countries, they don't want the GE corn.
Mm-hmm.
So our tax dollars go to buy that corn. Again, our tax dollars going to that crop as food aid. So it gets dumped on these countries who a lot of times don't even want genetically engineered food aid. So There's something wrong with that.
Well, and in the whole, you pointed out, there's a great thing pointed out in your movie as well, where people say, oh, well, we need to grow these crops to feed the poor people of the world. Well, if you look at what's happening, because we subsidize these crops so heavily, these GMO crops that the world frankly doesn't need in the abundance in which we produce them, what happens is, you know, they say even Mexico, our corn, because of the subsidy in both growing it and buying it and the research and the money that's extracted from our government by big farmers, because your farm subsidies sound like a great thing, but they don't go to the family farm. In Europe, they go to the family farm. In America, we don't subsidize the farm. We subsidize the crop.
Right.
And we subsidize the crop that's grown by the company that has the most money to pay for the most lobbyists.
Right.
And so what happens is you have these Mexican farmers. They say that Mexican corn costs 7 pesos. Whereas American corn can be sold to 4 to 5 pesos.
Actually, you say that, Deborah. We stole that again
it,
from
right,
movie.
Right, from your movie.
You can say it, too.
Now, what this does, of course, is it takes, in cultures throughout the world, farmers who used to be able to grow their own food, and now they can't afford to grow, and, you know, sell a little bit to the village around them. Now they can't afford to grow their own food. They stop growing food. They move to the city. They look for a job.
Right.
How have we fed the world by taking a farmer off his land?
Right.
A farmer in a place that needs farmers.
Right.
I mean, you have this bizarre situation where a farmer in Africa growing cotton by hand using no mechanical equipment, an American farmer will sell his cotton, highly subsidized, sell his cotton for less than that African farmer can sell for because of the huge subsidies. And, you know, it's a really controversial issue. That's what the whole big thing with one of the big battles in the WTO now is all about subsidies.
Yeah. You mentioned earlier in this segment about Roundup and Roundup Ready crops. And we have to educate our listeners as far as what's happened with this pesticide Roundup and what's gone on with Roundup Ready crops.
Tell us about that, Deborah.
Well, Roundup is an herbicide, and it kills everything green. And so it's one of the less toxic herbicides because after it's used, it breaks down pretty quickly.
And you can buy it in every store, and a lot of people have used it on the weeds around their house.
Yeah, it's the most popular herbicide in the world, and it kills everything green, which is great if you're trying to kill weeds. But then
right.
a lot of people who are interested in soil and soil health, it actually kills all the microorganisms in the soil that create soil fertility. So, you know, it's not like it's a free ride.
Right. The idea, and Francis and I believe very strongly, when you kill everything in the soil, you've killed everything in the soil. Okay? So that's the good stuff and the bad stuff. And we just have to be more careful about that. Now let's talk about Roundup Ready crops.
Well, Roundup Ready crops are genetically engineered with a bacteria that is naturally resistant to Roundup. So they took them 12 years. They found a bacteria that was naturally resistant to Roundup, and they genetically engineered that into the crop.
Mm-hmm.
So you grow the Roundup Ready corn, the Roundup Ready soy, and you spray it, and everything dies but the corn or the soy that's Roundup Ready.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's 85% of the GE crops in the world now are Roundup Ready.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason why they focused on that, their first GE crop, rather than something that they always say is going to have health benefits or it's going to have higher yield, is because their patent on Roundup was over in the year 2000. Their patent ran out. So they were looking for a way to essentially extend their patent because when you buy the Roundup Ready seeds, you have to agree that you will use Roundup on them.
Incredible.
So that's the way that works.
Our guest is Deborah Coons Garcia. She is the writer and director of an extraordinary new documentary called The Future of Food. It is riveting. It is in-depth. It is a very important movie, and you need to go see it. It's currently at the Film Forum in New York City. You can find out where it is after that if you're listening to the podcast after the show's left New York at the end of September at restaurantguysradio.com. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:45.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
You're back with the Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis from Stage Left Restaurant. Our guest today is Deborah Coons Garcia. She is the director of The Future of Food, which is a riveting new documentary on food, and we'll use her celebrity to make you go see it if you're not otherwise inclined to go see it. She is the widow of Jerry Garcia, and this movie is absolutely phenomenal.
Deborah, we were just talking about Roundup, which is the chemical that they use to kill all the weeds, and now they've come up with these genetically modified crops that will survive Roundup. So what some of the farmers have said is that the only way to find out whether or not genetically modified seeds have blown into your field, can you tell us what they're doing to in order?
Well, there's two ways you can do it. You can get a sample of it and send it off to a testing company for 100 or I don't know, a couple hundred dollars and get it tested that way. Or you can spray your fields with Roundup, and everything that dies is not Roundup ready, and everything that lives is Roundup ready. And if you haven't paid your patent fee, it would belong to Monsanto.
Either way, you're in trouble. We don't care if it's your land. We don't care about any of that stuff.
It
belongs to Monsanto.
It does remind me a little bit of how they used to find out if you were a witch or not.
Yeah, exactly. It's kind of like that. Exactly like that.
She sank. She was innocent.
Yeah. No, the other crops that are genetically, the other kind of genetic engineering are their BT crops, and they take BT, which is a natural bacterial insecticide, which organic farmers use. They spray it on their crop like once or twice a season if they need to. They've genetically engineered that bacteria into every cell of BT crops, which means you're actually eating this in every cell. And those plants, those ears of corn that are BT corn, are actually registered with the EPA as a pesticide.
So you're eating the pesticide itself.
You're eating it in every cell.
On purpose.
Super duper.
Yeah. Thanks so much for that.
You're welcome.
And one of the things, again, I want to reiterate that they own the gene, and they own everything the gene is in. So, you know, the implications, if you take this out to its logical conclusion, are if I get treated for some medical illness and they introduce a gene into my body that cures me, if they're allowed to patent the gene itself, they have a claim against me for the rest of my life as long as I'm using their gene in my DNA.
Right, or if they genetically modify me a kidney,
and what
they own that kidney for the rest of my life?
Yeah, there's a lot of interesting aspects to this because you can patent human genes now. In fact, the whole human genome process, the way it's turned out is that if you can name it, you can patent it.
So you don't even have to invent it. You just have to have found it.
No, you just have to find it. And there's a really famous case of a guy who had a blood disease, and they took part of his blood, and they made a pharmaceutical from it. And they kept having him come back, and they were, like, taking blood from him, and actually they were actually making a pharmaceutical from it. He didn't even know. Yes. And he found out, and he sued them because and they made, like, $300 million off this.
Off of his blood?
Yeah, out of his blood. And he sued them, and the court decided that he did not deserve any money from that, even though it was his blood, because, you know, hey, once it's out of his body, they can do whatever they want with it. So you can patent human genes, but not in situ. In other words, they're not patented once they're in your body, but once they're right out of your body, someone could grab it and patent it.
Say, hey, incredible. You're immune to cancer. We're taking you.
Look, here's my maxim. You should not be able to patent life itself, because if you can patent life, you know, if you can patent this particular crossing of corn, I got it. This particular agricultural practice, I got it. But if this particular piece of corn, and anywhere its pollen blows, and any corn its pollen blows into, maybe you should be held liable for infecting someone else's corn with your pollen. You know,
I think that's where we have to get to. I mean, it's as simple as that, that these large corporations are indeed liable for the damage they're doing to other people's fields.
The first
step. And there are some state legislatures that have those types of bills up in front of them, these liability bills. And so, the people who have the most self-interest here, which are the corporations, are the ones that end up getting the ear of the legislators, because they're just more aggressive about pressing their case. Although
they have a ton of money.
Yeah, and there are a lot of great organizations who are doing this work, a lot of great local. I don't know if there's a GE Free New Jersey, but there's GE Free Maine, GE Free California. There's a national network. I think it's GEAN, Genetic Engineering Action Network, and people can find out who they can talk to if they want to support this. I know in New York State they've got some bills, some labeling bills that are in front of the legislature, and they're a lot of people getting more and more exercised about this, and a lot of citizens are really, you know, joining this battle.
And listen, everybody. The first step is to get educated and make your own decisions. And the thing about going to see this film is it will present you with a lot of facts, and you can make your own decisions and pursue your own investigation. But have no doubt, these companies are out there to make anybody who opposes them look like a kook. Just like they made anybody who said smoking was bad for you, they spent millions and millions of dollars to make anybody who said smoking
billions
was bad for
dollars.
You, billions, look like a kook. You're not a kook, okay? These are real issues, they're real problems, and they're monstrous, monstrous new issues, and you need to do something. And Deborah, what are your thoughts on how people can get involved?
Well, I think one great way, probably the most pleasurable way to get involved, is to go to farmers markets, have a relationship with local farmers, with local restaurants, where you talk to the people and find out where they get their food and see if their food is genetically engineered or not. And I think that's great. You can also read labels, even though it's not labeled. You know, GE is not. It's not mandatory that it be labeled.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of companies that have organic food that, that.
Truthfully, corn syrup is a way that you can guess if.
Yeah, you probably want to avoid corn syrup.
Because most of it is genetically modified. Our guest is Deborah Coons Garcia. She's the writer and director of an extraordinary new documentary called The Future of Food, and we'll be back in a moment with a little more with Deborah. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:55. Back with the Restaurant Guys, Mark, Pascal, and Francis Chatto, Stage Left Restaurant in New Brunswick, New Jersey. And we're here with Deborah Coons Garcia, who is the writer and director of The Future of Food, an amazing and important movie that you should see and you can find out all about by going to our website. And we were just talking about, through the show, we've been talking about some things that have gone awry with corporate agribusiness and genetically modified organisms and how they're doing some real ill to the food supply of the world. Well, basically trying to take it over. I don't think that's an exaggeration.
Yeah, Deborah, what we really need you to do is tell us what we can do to fight this.
Well, you can go to farmers markets. You can have a CSA. You can find restaurants like you guys' restaurant that you know you can trust the food.
Mm-hmm. CSAs, just so you know, are community-supported agriculture.
It's like buying a share in a farm's produce.
That's where you go and you get a box of food once a week or
and you can find out more about you can look that up on our website, too, how to find one by you.
You can also go on our website, The Future of Food, if you want organizations that you can see what people are doing in your neighborhood. My county that I live in is GE-free. We voted a couple of years ago that the county would be GE-free, so no one can grow GE crops.
The problem is we need to fight this on a national level because if some GE pollen blows into your county, you have a real problem there.
Yeah, and I think we need to have a national labeling bill.
Absolutely.
And Dennis Kucinich is going to enter a bill in this year, and I think that people should contact their legislators and let them know that they want this food labeled because then at least they'll have a choice. And the way it works is that if it's labeled, people don't buy it. And then the stores don't stock it, and then the farmers don't grow it, and it goes all the way back.
So that's
a great way to do it.
So here's what we can do. We can support your local farmers, as we always talk about on the show. You can contact your legislators and tell them that you're against patenting life, and you are for requiring GMO foods to be labeled, just like the rest of the civilized world. You can go to our website and click right through to the Future of Food link. You can go to our website and click right through to the Meatrix link to help family farms across the country. And you can go to restaurants that support local farmers, like Stage Left Restaurant, shameless plug. Even if they charge a little more, the food tastes better anyway. We want to thank Deborah Coons Garcia for being our guest.
It's been great having you on the show this last 2 days.
Thanks for having me. Yeah, it's been fun.
It's super.
I hope that our listeners enjoyed it as much as we did.
And listen up out there. Go see her film. Eat well. Do good. See you tomorrow. I'm Francis Schott.
And I'm Mark Pascal.
We are The Restaurant Guys. Central Jersey, 1450. Time is 12 noon.